I'm rarely impressed with the way mainstream press handles stories relating to religion. In fact, on those rare occasions when the topic is addressed in a responsible, knowledgeable manner, it's likely that the story's byline will include the credit RNS. Those letters stand for Religion News Service, which for 75 years has provided the kind of professional, objective coverage that's essential to understanding the many ways religion influences our society, our culture, and our nation. Kevin Ekstrom is the editor-in-chief of this award-winning news service, and I'm very pleased every time he joins us here on State of Belief Radio. Today is no exception. Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with the story that kind of shattered the simplistic media narrative of religion versus progressives recently, when President Obama talked about his faith helping to lead him to change his position on marriage equality. How do you think the mainstream press did?
I think it was a mixed bag, as in most cases. I was really struck, though, this time how everyone focused on the immediate political ups and downs of this, that this story is a lot more complicated and a lot more emotional and, frankly, a lot more personal than I think it get treated this time around. There's, journalism, but especially political journalism, is about horse races and who's in and who's out and who's ahead. And immediately this issue, I think, was translated into those terms. I think really, though, this was much more of a big cultural shift story that I don't think totally got played the way that it could have been.
Mm-hmm. When you covered it at RNS, which I know you did, were there gaps in the coverage in the secular press that you tried to fill in your coverage of it?
Well, we're in sort of a unique position because we cover the news, but we also have to keep up with everybody else. And so we try to pick and choose which stories we're going to cover. Or on these big stories, we pick and choose how we're going to cover them. So the way that we did this one was we looked at Obama's notion of, I'm doing this because this is the way that I would want to be treated, the golden rule, basically. And we looked at it from, is the golden rule essentially the only religious code that we have in this country that everyone can sort of agree on? And we make the case that it is. So we didn't get, we mentioned the politics of it and that, this is a, good for Obama, bad for Obama. But we didn't dwell on that. We were trying to come at it from a more, well, frankly, religious angle, mm-hmm. and talk about the golden rule aspect.
I see. Well, I'm sorry, I have to smile when I say this, and I know I shouldn't, but the zealots seem to have gone away from the 2012 presidential campaign. In fact, I think that everybody who claimed that God had called them has now dropped out. And we could do the theology of that, but that's not what we'll do. Faith is still a prominent part of the race itself, obviously. And even more so, it's an important component of the subtext of this. How, Kevin, do you think religion is going to affect the campaigns now going forward?
Well, we saw just in the New York Times this week how there are at least some Republicans who would like to drag back Jeremiah Wright, Obama's Chicago pastor, into this and try to do with him what John McCain refused to do 4 years ago. I don't think that that's going to really work. I think that, the thing to watch, obviously, is Mitt Romney and his Mormonism and to what extent that becomes an issue. He hasn't really wanted to talk about it, I think, for obvious reasons. I don't see the Obama campaign really going after that on any sort of real level. I think religion in some ways is going to take a bit of a back seat this time around just because the pocketbook issues of the economy and jobs are so paramount. And that's what that's what's going to motivate people. That said, I think religious values and religious beliefs are going to inform a lot of people's votes, whether or not they're the deciding factor or not. So I call this the AJ test. Mm-hmm. And I named this after my father-in-law. He is a lifelong Southern Baptist NRA member, as conservative as they come. And there are two things that he does not like: Mormons and President Obama. But there's one thing that he dislikes more, and that's President Obama. So he will vote for a Mormon, even though he doesn't, it wouldn't be his first choice. And he doesn't like the idea of a Mormon getting into the White House. But his religious beliefs inform his vote against Obama as more so than they inform his vote for Romney.
You know, Richard Land said just exactly that, that most evangelicals are going to hold their nose and vote for Romney.
Right. And I think what's different is, you know, if evangelicals were sort of dispirited and kind of ho-hum, you know, they might stay home and that could be sort of a protest vote against Romney and his Mormonism, perhaps. But I think what's different, though, is that conservatives and evangelicals, but mostly conservatives, are so riled up against Obama that they're going to go out and vote for anyone that can send him packing. And in this case, the only option they really have is Romney, and they'll do it if they have to, but a lot of them won't be super thrilled about it.
At the National Prayer Breakfast that I think again last week, President Obama turned to religious language. He certainly did it in talking about same-gender marriage and his support for it. But he went into more detail than he used to. And he talks about the sacrifice of Jesus and some of the other kind of doctrinal stuff. Is that in order to prove that he really is a Christian, not Muslim, or what is that?
Well, I think it is genuine. You know, when he stands up at the White House Easter prayer breakfast and says, you know, I found salvation at the foot of the cross, I have every reason to believe that he's saying that because he actually believes it. Is there a political element to it? I'm sure there probably is a small degree, but this president has not been as willing or as anxious to use religion in the same sort of way that maybe President Bush did, where he kind of wore it very publicly, very much on his sleeve. But I think it's genuine. Now, we just did a poll last week that found that 1 in 6 Americans still think the guy's a Muslim. Which makes you wonder why he keeps talking about it if no one's buying it, or if 1 in 6 people still don't believe him. But I think in politics, if you do not define yourself, other people will define you for you. And I think that's what it is. It's a constant battle for this White House to keep hammering home the message that, yes, he is a Christian. Yes, he does go to church. No, he is not a Muslim. And as long as, you know, there's this stubborn little sect of American politics that doesn't believe him, they're going to have to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, let me change subjects for a moment. There hasn't been as much mainstream media attention to this story lately, but I want to look at the so-called anti-Sharia law initiatives, which continue to move forward in various places across the country. Kansas recently, and also Michigan, which has a very large Muslim population. Kevin, what do you think the long-term implications of these ongoing efforts might be, and why aren't the self-appointed champions of religious liberty seeing that they've got a dog in this fight?
Well, it's because Muslims are easy to pick on. And anything, you know, it's easy to jump on a bandwagon that stands for America and American values and, you know, against Islam. It's hard, I think, for anyone in a lot of ways to stand up for Islam in this country still 10 years after 9/11. I mean, when they call President Obama a Muslim, they're not doing it as a compliment, put it that way.
Right.
So, Islam is not a very politically or socially popular cause. And so it's easy to either jump on the bandwagon against it or to stand by and not make a big deal of it because you're not going to win any friends. But what we found is that the anti-Sharia movement is actually losing a lot of steam in the state legislatures. And that's primarily after, you know, people sat down and took a look at this and said, wait, what is this really all about? And it could affect, you know, Catholic divorces and church tribunals. It could affect Jewish court decisions. It's not just about Islam. And so I think that's why we're seeing Governor Brownback of Kansas really not sure if he's going to sign this or not. And in some states where these laws have been introduced, they've either died because they were put at the bottom of the pile and they never got around to it, or they were actually withdrawn after Muslim groups stood up and said, hey, you can't do this. This is profoundly un-American. And so, yeah, these cases do get a lot of attention, but when you step back and look at the whole picture, the movement is losing a bit of steam. in the state houses.
Every time you're with us, there's one question that is my favorite question to ask you. What have been, in your opinion, the most underreported religion stories in the past few months? Stories that RNS has covered, but that you think got short shrift in the rest of the media?
I'm not sure that this totally falls into this category, but I was struck by it. And I was watching Chuck Colson's funeral at the National Cathedral the other day. And I could not help but be struck by the image of the female Episcopal Bishop of Washington presiding over this funeral and saying prayers, Lord, accept Charles as a sheep of your own flock, a sinner of your own redeeming. I mean, she was sort of stepping out, on behalf of Chuck Colson. She probably didn't agree with a thing he said. Mm-hmm. And I was really struck at whether or not that would be true on the other side of things. Would conservatives step out on the line in favor of a progressive that they really disagreed with? Now, I don't know that that's an underreported story. I don't know that it's a story that the press got wrong, but I think it's a dynamic of American religion that is harder to put your finger on. And I think we saw it in very stark relief at the cathedral that, progressives were setting aside their political differences, to honor Chuck Colson. And I'm not slamming one side or the other, right. But I just wonder if American political and religious conservatives would be willing to do the other thing, to do the opposite. Would they be willing to say such things about, say, President Obama? And I think it says a lot about religious values in the country and the kinds of religious values that animate one side versus the kind that don't always tend to animate the other.
Hmm. I've already asked you about the presidential campaign, but what other important issues do you think will be influenced by religion in the next few months? There was so much talk about the Catholic bishops' claims that their religious liberties were being violated. That seems to be quieting down some, but I understand they're planning this fortnight of freedom starting June 21st to focus all, their words, all the energies the Catholic community can muster for religious liberty as they define it. Mm-hmm. How big is this going to be?
I think it will be a big thing for the hierarchy. It will be a much, much smaller thing for the laity and the people in the pews. The polls and the surveys have indicated that, Catholics not only disagree with their bishops on contraception, but they disagree with this idea that religious liberty is under attack. Now, Catholics, as a rule, generally don't like their church getting beaten up. That doesn't mean they're going to agree with it, and it doesn't mean that they're going to buy the bishop's argument that, they're under attack. So I think, there will be some fireworks, and I was sort of struck that the church is setting themselves up as modern-day political martyrs along the same lines of saints, who are killed for their faith, and that it's in their own material. You can see it. Mm-hmm. I think that's stark. Yeah, they'll get some attention. They'll get some press. I don't know that it's going to move the needle mm-hmm. really that much.
We talk a lot, you and I do, and a lot of the people around us, about the role of religion in our society and culture. You're in a position where you have to listen as well as talk or, mm-hmm. or write. And I know you must receive a lot of reader feedback on the stories that you do at RNS. Do you have a sense of what people are responding to the most, what topics seem to generate the most interest? And I'm talking both about responses that you receive and about the nifty new feature on the RNS website where we can see which stories are the most popular with other readers.
Yeah. It's interesting. There are two stories, one atheists and secularists. We get more comments, more traffic, more attention to those stories than almost any other story we do, which is interesting.
Because, in which way? What kind
of way? Well, there's this media conception, I think maybe it's partly true, that there are atheists who sit at home and do nothing but comment on news stories. And they certainly comment on a lot of ours, and they forward it and they put it on Facebook, and they're very popular. The other thing, though, is stories that seem to resonate with people about faith in everyday life. And by that, I mean, I'm thinking of a couple of actually atheist stories. So we had a story about grief beyond God. So dying rituals, death and dying without religion. And this was primarily about how atheists do it, but it was hugely popular, not just with the atheist crowd, but also with people, because everyone goes through death at some point, and that resonates. We had another story along the same lines about can you be a good person without religion? Can you have values without religion? Mm-hmm. And you know, everyone has values of one sort or another, and so that really resonates. So the stories that we find most popular, but that are actually hardest to do, are the ones about people putting religion into their lives and into their everyday lives. And that's what really seems to be resonating with people beyond the politics, beyond the institutions, although we do a lot of that too. But that's where people seem to be most animated.
Do you have any advice on what we need to look for the next few weeks?
Next few weeks, we're getting into church convention season. So the Episcopalians, the Presbyterians, and the Lutherans are all meeting this year. Human sexuality is going to take a center stage, so that's worth watching. But I would be watching for, at least in the Obama campaign, to what extent religion gets played up or not. They just hired a 24-year-old guy to head up religious outreach. It's been a little bit panned in Washington, because if he's 24, how experienced can he be and how much of a priority is it? Set that aside, but it will be interesting to watch how, or even if, the Obama campaign tries to engage the religion question in the next couple of weeks and months.
Always good. Always a good conversation. Kevin Ekstrom is the editor-in-chief of Religion News Service, a nonprofit news organization with a proud 75-year history of commitment to an ongoing conversation about the role of religion in public life. As always, Kevin, thank you for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me back.